It's 6 minutes after 10, and you're listening to WMUK, 102.1 FM, music, NPR, local arts, and more. And it's time now to welcome David Baldwin to the studio here at WMUK. Mr. Baldwin, you have just joined us here in the Kalamazoo community, and you're coming all the way from New York City to take the reins at Fontana Chamber Arts, which is the organization that brings us such incredible variety of classical music, forward-looking music, music that's standard in the repertoire, as well as jazz and new music. We're very excited to have you here, and let me officially welcome you to Kalamazoo on WMUK.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me.
Let's go back and get to know you a little bit.
Okay.
From what I understand, music has been very important to you from a very young age. You're trained as a musician.
Yes, I was a boy soprano. I basically started in music in church, and I had a wonderful choir master there who also later became my piano teacher. I had learned how to play the piano by ear very early on, and so my parents, about five, decided that I should have lessons, given my, interest in it and proclivity. So, yeah, right from the beginning, and I did a lot of interesting things as a kid before my voice changed, and then I had no voice to speak of, But I sang at Toscanini's estate, and I did all these great things, the Fare Requiem and Amahl and the Night Visitors and all nice things. And then by the age of 12 or 13, that career was abruptly, ended. So I continued with the piano and went to Juilliard pre-college and then ultimately to the Curtis Institute in Philadelphia.
Where you studied collaborative piano?
Yes. I did a dual degree, actually, at Penn in English Lit, because I knew I didn't want to be a performer, but I really wanted to achieve, the highest level that I could, and Curtis was a great place for me to do so. And I always enjoyed the chamber music and working with other people as opposed to... I love the solo piano repertoire, but that wasn't my strength, and so...
Well, did you have a period of time or even a moment that where you did have to make that choice and say, I don't see my life as being one of concert pianist?
Absolutely. It was after the first year at Curtis, and I saw this immense talent around me and saw all of these people...
gunning for it.
Exactly. And I knew that I just didn't have that in me. You have to have a certain fire for, and a passion for that. And quite honestly, I just did not like performing for other people. An earlier age, I remember practicing all the time, and I had a hard time because my mom would always listen to me, and so she would always say, "Oh, that was beautiful," or "That was great," and I hated the idea of people listening because I'm trying to practice, And so every time I was practicing, I was trying to play, perfectly, and I wasn't taking the time that I needed to work things out because I thought, I'm performing, and so I never liked it actually.
But what you can develop from that is a remarkable sympathy for the people going through the process.
Absolutely.
Who are trying
to
be artists they can believe in themselves,
Yeah, you totally develop a sensitivity for all of that. And, having managed artists later in, life, and there's a complete variety of personalities, obviously, that come to it, but at the core of it is there's, I suppose, an insecurity because they always feel that they're maybe the flavor of the month and, all of these young hotshots are coming up and that kind of thing. And you wind up becoming a bit of a psychologist as well, with them. But no, I definitely understood them very well.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's work our way up to that point in your career where you decided to look at artist management. Well, when did that start?
Well, it was actually by accident. When I graduated undergrad, I worked for the Philadelphia Orchestra, and that was my first job out of school. And, of course, I knew all the players because I was, right there, and many of them are on the Curtis faculty. So I got a job, and I was just like the artist liaison. So every time artists would come in, I would take care of their needs and whatever, and after a few years there, I decided that I wanted to do an MBA. And because I had done an English Lit degree and a collaborative piano degree, and neither one of them was really going to be particularly useful. So I decided it was important to do an MBA. And Columbia had an evening course so I could continue to work. Penn did not. And so Yo-Yo Ma had been with the orchestra. He was recording with David Zinman. And we just got to talking, and I mentioned to him that I would be leaving the orchestra, that I was, you know, going to move back to New York in order to go to Columbia. And he said, oh, and you should call my manager. You know, I think she has an opening. So I did, you know, not really knowing what I was getting myself into. And sure enough, I was hired, and I worked there for 3 years in New York until I graduated. And then they moved me to London, and I ran the European operation over there for 7 years. And so I just sort of fell upon artist management in a strange way. But,
fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, you've already dropped Yo-Yo Ma's name, and I've read a little ahead in your biography, and I know you've worked with these extraordinary artists.
I was very fortunate.
Just go ahead and name a few of these people.
Leon Fleischer was one of my clients. Garrick Olson, Yefim Bronfman, Sarah Chang, Jeremy Dank. Did quite a bit of touring as well with the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, the King's College Choir of Cambridge. So I've been really, really fortunate to work with some of the greats.
I think you mentioned, even as you were growing up, some of the opportunities you had to sing or play involved some absolute luminaries, you know, these magnetic personalities. It takes a little bit of doing to adapt, I would think, too.
Yeah, well, some of them I had met early on. I was a student at Tanglewood. I was a pianist, and Leon Fleischer was coaching. You know, he did a lot of coaching sessions, and at the time he was the head of the music department at Tanglewood. In fact, Dan Gustin from Gilmore was the head of Tanglewood when I was a student there, so I've known him a long time, and certainly Leon. And so it was really remarkable that 5 years later I was, you know, this man's manager in Europe, of all places, and I had been listening to his Brahms and Beethoven, which were just sacred to me, you know, since I was a kid. And so it was pretty amazing.
Wow. You also, at some point, transitioned out of artist management and developed a concert series that already existed. But
It had existed for 40 years. It was the Shriver Hall Concert Series in Baltimore, which is affiliated and on the Johns Hopkins University campus. And it's a wonderful series that really brought in, you know, top desk people and just great chamber music, as well as solo recitals. A little bit of jazz, not quite as much as Fontana does here. But it was a fantastic experience, and I loved it.
Well, we're going to get a little more about your experience there and what drew you to Kalamazoo. But I'd like to take a short break for some music that I'm happy to say you helped me pick out. In fact, you provided me this performance. Would you introduce this one? This is Yefim and Martha.
Yefim Bronfman and Martha Argerich at her festival in Lugano. And it's a live recording of the Prokofiev Symphony No. 1, the Classical Symphony.
It's a live recording with Martha Argerich and Yefim Bronfman, and it's the Prokofiev First Symphony, First Movement, especially picked out by my guest, who's David Baldwin, who's joining me here for the first time in WMUK, the first of several, I should hope to say. And we're talking about Fontana Chamber Arts. It's now under your executive directorship and moving forward. What did you know about Fontana Chamber Arts before, you know, you...
I was familiar, certainly, and most people in the industry are. It's well-regarded in the industry. As you probably know, it's won several ASCAP awards for programming, and I had several of my artists, like Jeremy Denk, for instance, who had performed here. So it's very well-respected in the industry.
Did you know about Neil Saunders, the English horn player?
I did. I knew a little bit. I've certainly obviously learned a lot more since. But it's got a remarkable background, you know, and it's really interesting how the two organizations were able to merge together and create even a stronger and healthier organization, I think.
I love Kalamazoo. I love the artistic community here. I think it's really great, but I do wonder what possessed you to leave the artistic golden land of New York
to come
to Kalamazoo.
Yeah, it's funny. I mean, first of all, I was just so taken by the place when I first came here to interview because there's such a wealth of arts, you know, music as well as all sorts of arts here, the theater and dance. And for a smaller city, it's pretty remarkable.
Was there something about it being a smaller city that attracted you as well?
Absolutely. I mean, I'll give you an example. I bought a house. I'm over in the K College, you know, Western neighborhood. And I think within the first 4 days, I've met more of my neighbors than I met in my last apartment in New York in 4 years. They all come over with baked goods. And, you know, the idea of owning a home, too, is nice because that's not going to happen in New York City when you're working in the arts.
That's true.
Yeah. So just the reception and the people really made a huge difference. And, you know, I recognize the challenges at Fontana, and I'm ready for a challenge, you know.
That's great. That's wonderful. You know, it's always the same realities. Budget, not
Absolutely.
Enough money.
Welcome to the arts community.
Yes. And filling the concert hall. Kalamazooans
Indeed.
Need to be reminded that there's world-class artists coming
Absolutely.
Through the area. And, of course, the artists themselves might be the easiest part because they love to play.
Oh, yeah, completely. I mean, they're the easy part, you know.
Yeah.
The programming is the easy part. It's getting the people out and getting them excited and getting them involved, which is the challenge, particularly in a community that has so much going on.
True.
You have to really distinguish yourself.
Well, we have a couple of major metropolitan areas. There's Chicago. There's Detroit. So artists tend to see Kalamazoo as a nice little
Absolutely.
Pit stop.
Absolutely. I mean, we could not be better located. you know, even South Bend and Ann Arbor, which, of course, you know,
of course.
Michigan, Ann Arbor has a fantastic UMS series. No, that was absolutely a consideration of mine as well. And I'm friends, you know, having been on the management side, I know everyone who runs UMS or Chicago Symphony Presents or University of Chicago Presents. So I can call my friends and say, all right, who do you have? And, you know, you can work a better deal that way. So it's nice.
Is there anything you can do about getting someone to come out here and open a real bagel shop for us?
I wish. I really wish. I've experienced the Kalamazoo bagel, and I think I'm going to have some shipped from home. You know?
Yeah.
Although I have to say, there's this pastry place. I think it's called the Victorian Bakery or something, but one of my neighbors who bring these baked goods, you know, brought over this pain au chocolat, which I have to say, in all of my time in France and whatever, I've never had anything that good. I mean, it was amazing. So that's going to have to be my new bagel.
Well, you are a true East Coaster, right?
Indeed.
Having been in Baltimore and in New York, and you'll have to get used to West Coasting on Lake Michigan here, I guess.
I'm really looking forward to that, yeah.
Okay.
And its proximity. I didn't realize, you know, at the time how close it is, and an hour away. That's great.
Right.
So I'm really looking forward to exploring that, as well as exploring up north and Interlaken in that area. I think will be very fun during the summer.
Well, let's go back to your time at the Shriver...
Shriver Hall Concert Series.
Concert
yep.
Series. What shape was that in when you took over and...
Artistically, it was in good shape. They didn't have much of a tradition of fundraising. And so the president of the board was Piotr Gorski's daughter. She was a Rothschild. And I think a wonderful, wonderful woman. But I think they leaned very heavily on her. And, you know, that wasn't going to be a going concern forever. So it was really about professionalizing the organization and focusing both the board and the staff into donor relations and just development, which just didn't exist because she was sort of writing the checks. And, you know, she recognized that that needed to change, and I certainly did. But I was able to also up the level artistically because I had so many connections in the music world and my former clients. But it was a great experience, you know, and we did really, really well. It was an 1,100-seat hall, and we pretty much sold it out all the time.
Oh, that's incredible.
Yeah.
A lot of artists and people who are drawn to the arts really hate the money part or just aren't interested in looking at the hard.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I have a lot of colleagues, you know, that you know, I don't mind it because the way I look at it is that, you know, you sit down with, first of all, you have to care about your product. And if you really want to up the level and if you really want to go there, ticket sales alone, just in no organization across the country are going to cover it. You need to find other ways. But I look at it as, you know, you're sitting down with some very interesting people. And, you know, fortunately, with my experience in Europe and that kind of stuff, we can talk about lots of things, whether it be museums or art or travel. So I don't know. I don't mind that aspect of it.
Oh, you just reminded me we need to talk about the Academy of St. Martin and the Fields.
Indeed, yes.
The ensemble. You said you toured with them.
I toured them throughout the United States.
You toured them. Were kind of the go-between.
Exactly. It was my job to make sure that they had 3 weeks a year in the United States in a perfectly routed tour that wasn't going to have them going from Houston to Ann Arbor to L.A., you know, in 3 days.
Yeah.
So we would break it up regionally. It was great. And, you know, Josh Bell was recently announced about a year ago as their music director. 2 years ago, sorry. And so we had several successful tours with them, it was very exciting. Great group of people.
Right. I've enjoyed his recording, conducting the Beethoven.
Yes. They're doing an entire Beethoven cycle, actually. So they have the first one out, and there's a couple more to come.
Oh, yeah. Excellent. And, I'm going to name drop Josh as well, because he's one of the early winners of the Stalberg competition
here in
Kalamazoo.
Yes, I did know that. Yeah.
Well, I have some classic ASMITF to play
Perfect.
For you. This goes back to their earlier music director, Neville Mariner. Did you ever meet Mr. Mariner?
Yes. In fact, he's turning 80 next year, and they're doing a big birthday celebration for him in London as well as New York.
And he's still going strong?
Going very strong, yep.
All right, here's a couple of Hungarian dances from the Academy of St. Martin in the Fields. The Academy of St. Martin in the Fields, with a couple of Hungarian dances, led by Neville Mariner. And I believe we have a correction to make.
Yes, indeed, he's turning 90, not 80. I misspoke.
Wow, what's one decade?
Exactly.
It's funny how a lot of folks in classical music seem to live very, very long lives. I think conductors are some of the longest lived
and even some of the pianists. I mean, you know, Leon Fleischer is coming with the Kalamazoo Symphony next season, and he's going to turn 85. Yep.
We here in Kalamazoo are going to have to stick around another year or so to see you unveil your first programmed season.
Yeah, everything has already been programmed for 13-14, so I'll begin curating the 14-15 season.
All right.
Yeah.
Give me a hint or any.
Well, you know, I don't think it's going to be a huge departure from what, I mean, artistically, it's very strong, you know, and I definitely want to keep the jazz element in there. I want to keep the forward thinking and contemporary music element. Another thing that drew me to the job, and I did not have this in Baltimore, it was a much more conservative audience in Baltimore, is people's willingness to open their ears. They may not like it necessarily, but they're willing to try it and see if it works. That being said, I would like to see a little more of some standard stuff that is near and dear to my heart. So I think it's going to be a good mix.
Sure. And you have a lot of friends in this industry and the artists themselves.
Absolutely, yeah.
You probably won't have trouble filling up 6 seasons.
No, I know that's the easy part. You know, you can program a season in about 10 minutes. Now, the rest of it is the tough part.
How far ahead do artists work these days at this level?
Generally, 2 years, sometimes 3 years in advance. Opera singers tend to work more like 3 or 4, and conductors as well. But soloists and chamber groups would be, 2 or 3 years.
Oh, yes. You reminded me Meredith Arwady is coming in.
Yes, she is.
Next season. She's wonderful.
I love her. I had no idea that she was from Kalamazoo until I got here, so I learned about that. But she's a fantastic singer, and she has a really interesting program. I think it's fairly new for her as well. It's more of a cabaret type of setting, so that should be exciting.
You mentioned knowing Jeremy Dank and having managed.
Yes.
Before we get to Jeremy Dank's selection here, because that's where I'm leading up to, what is managing an artist? You set a calendar. Is that the basics of it? You deal with presenters who want to hire the artist?
Absolutely. You're in charge. I mean, in my company, we had what is called booking agents. And so they sort of divide up territory throughout the country. And you basically manage them to obtain engagements. And you also obtain engagements yourself. But it's about putting that together. It's negotiating all of their contracts. But it's so much more in terms of, you really have a very personal and a deep relationship with these people because you're on the phone with them every day. And you do sort of become their psychiatrist or their, there are also kind of very few boundaries. Sunday morning, you're going to probably get a call from someone. It's not like it's not a 9-to-5 type of thing. In Jeremy in particular, he's an amazing person, not only a great pianist and a great artist, but he's also a great writer. He's got this blog. I don't know if you've ever read
Think Dank.
Yeah, exactly. which is just brilliant. And he writes for The New Yorker and The New York Times Book Review. And, he's a real intellect, but fun, just a lot of fun and very witty.
Well, he makes a lot of fun of himself. And
indeed, very self-deprecating, yes.
What happens when something goes wrong? Like an artist becomes ill, and that must happen all the time.
It does. And, fortunately, when you're working with a large agency and that kind of stuff, we had 24 pianists. So I can just pick up my computer and see, okay, who's available here and help and work with the presenter to get the best possible replacement that we can.
Did you ever have to negotiate over repertoire?
Always.
Really?
Yes.
Because presenters want one thing and the artist
is
building
something
else.
Yeah, because they look at the artist. I mean, many artists can get pigeonholed into certain repertoire. And without naming names, there can be your Bach specialist who really wants to be playing Brahms Concerti.
Sure.
And the orchestra is just, so you sometimes have to muscle that in, but, with the promise of a Bach encore or something,
Well, I think Garrick Olson certainly broke out of that, but he was a Chopin specialist.
Absolutely. And in Europe, when I first started working with him over there, he was definitely, because he had won the Warsaw competition in 1970, that everyone wanted the Chopin, And although he loves it and he didn't care too much, he has such a huge repertoire available to him. He must have played 20 concerti a season, which is really unheard of for most artists. He was quite remarkable in that sense.
Another great intellect as well.
Indeed. Yeah, and a great guy.
This work we're going to listen to is from the Sonata Number 1?
Yes.
By Charles Ives, the great American composer and iconoclast is a good word for Mr. Ives. Anything special about this movement, the Alcotts?
I would refer people to Jeremy Danks. I guess you can probably Google it because he says it far better than I ever could. But he explains in a New Yorker piece that he wrote about recording this Ives disc and parts of the Alcotts in particular, he never really understood until he was driving in his car, crossing over a bridge and looking at the way that the light hit the river. And then he knew how to play it. And it's just, it's an amazing, amazing movement.
The heart of the sonata, you called it. The,
indeed,
yes. The second movement from the first sonata by Charles Ives.
Yes.
With great intro music to this composer, right?
Absolutely. It's a great way to get to know what Ives is all about. You know, it's sort of the soloist version of the unanswered question, as it would be for the orchestral, you know, listener.
And Jeremy Denkin performance there. He was a client of yours at Opus 3 Artists.
Correct.
And, well, that bodes very well for our future here with Fontana Chamber Arts. If you've just tuned in, I'm talking to David Baldwin, who is the new director of Fontana Chamber Arts, and we'll be back a week from today to discuss the next summer festival coming up in July.
Exactly, yes. We're very excited about it.
Well, me too. I'm looking forward to playing some of the music and talking about the artists a little bit. And your first programmed season will be 2014-2015. So,
correct.
We'll see. We'll see what
happens
then.
I have a little while to wait, I guess.
Yeah. Oh, time moves quickly here in Kalamazoo.
It does.
I just wanted to give you the last opportunity to say anything you had on your mind to Kalamazooans who might be renewing their subscriptions to Fontana Chamber Arts, and also a last thank you for coming in and welcome to Kalamazoo.
Well, no, thank you. And I just want to say that, you know, the community has been so welcoming and just amazing that I feel like I'm home already, you know, and it's going to be a good thing.
Well, you moved here in a good time of year.
Yes,
just
yes.
Wait till your
I haven't
first
had the winter.
Winter
yet, yes. I can take it.
Okay. Thank you so much, David.
Thank you.
Let's hear some Garrick Olson from his most recent recording of Enrique Granados' music, Goyescas.
Great.